Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. On today's show, I speak with artist Nikki Singleton. That's coming up on Endeavors. My plane for London leaves in about 6 hours, and I don't know when I'll be back to Canada. I'm sort of at that what the hell am I doing phase, but I think that will pass once I actually get there and start school and all that. It's also hard to believe I'm going back to school at 35. I mean, it's not a full degree or anything. It's not like I'm getting a master's or a postdoc or anything like that, but it is a significant investment, both of money and time. And you know, I've always toyed with the idea of staying in Britain long term. I mean, I've spent the last couple of summers there. So who knows? We'll see if this leads anywhere, but this is probably my last time in Victoria, at least for this year, since I don't think I'll be home, for Christmas. But I also realized that I think especially when I was on call, that I was getting away from myself a little bit, you know. I think not that I was trying to be somebody that I wasn't, but I just think I got away from the reason I went there in the first place. Why I was going over there and what I was trying to do. And you know, I feel that, you know, coming home for 3 weeks, I think it really helped me, settle and refocus. And speaking of refocusing, this show is, you know, I think getting back to its roots and getting back to itself. I counted, I've only done something like 24 episodes this year. Far cry from like the 70 or so I used to do a year when I was doing 2 shows a week. But, you know, I mean, that's just the nature of shows, and everything has its ebbs and flows. But it strikes me that, you know, now that I'm getting back to single guest, long form interviews, I think it was only appropriate that the first guest in the return to this format, is an artist from Vancouver who is, represented by a PR and marketing company, that I've enjoyed a very friendly and professional relationship with for over 10 years. That, of course, is Murray Patterson Marketing Group. They are lovely, lovely people from Vancouver, Laura, Brian, and the whole gang. And today's guest is Nikki Singleton. There's an event in Vancouver every year called the East Side Culture Crawl. And it is East Vancouver is one of the most sort of artist-centric characters and artistically and culturally diverse areas in the country. And so the East Side Culture Crawl is like a gathering and a showcase of all different artists, whether it be painters or sculptors. You've got, you know, ceramicists, woodworkers, metalworkers, all kinds of things. It's actually a really, really cool event. And Nikki Singleton is one of the artists that is participating this year. She is a Canadian painter, illustrator, and sculptor based in Vancouver and Brooklyn. She has undertaken residencies at Similkameen Artist Residency in Carameos, La Chenette in Sao Paulo, La Generale en Manufacture in Paris, Hotel Maria Capel in the Netherlands, and Triangle in Brooklyn, and as well has had solo exhibitions at Gallery during Spring Break Art Show, NYC, in Undercurrents, the Holocaust Museum in Dallas, Texas, and Imagine IC in Amsterdam. Her work has also been shown in the Brooklyn Museum, the Whitney Biennial, the Chelsea Art Museum, White Box Gallery, Betty Campbell Gallery, Dixon Place, TSA Gallery, Underdonk Gallery, Studio 10, the Knockdown Center, and Paul Thibodeau Gallery in San Francisco. She holds an MFA from the painting studio from the New York School and is currently represented by Arts Per Gallery in Paris, France. Like I said, she is one of the many artists that are taking part in the East Side Culture Crawl, which has a lineup of nearly 450 artists. And I mentioned painting and sculpture. There's also jewelry and furniture to leather making, photography, glassworks, textiles, and so much more. And the Culture Crawl itself runs from November 16th to 19th. That's Thursday through Sunday. This is my conversation with Nikki Singleton. Nikki Singleton, hello, how are we today?
Hi, doing great, thanks. Great to be here.
So you are being featured in the East Side Culture Crawl in Vancouver, which is a big event this summer. And I know you've been featured in many cities in the world and throughout North America and Europe, but is there something different about being a part of a show in the city that you live in?
Yes, good question. I think it's been great coming back to Vancouver, actually, from New York, because I was there for 10 years before I moved back here in 2019. And you know, it's just such a different scene there. And I didn't know what to expect because I've been gone for 20 years from Vancouver. And like finding out about the Culture Crawl was amazing. I mean, last year actually was the first year that I did the crawl. And it was just such a wonderful experience. And it was only after, you know, right after the pandemic. So supposedly it wasn't as busy and, you know, animated as it usually is, people were telling me. But so many people came by the studio, and I had such amazing, amazing conversations. And it's, you know, I've never experienced anything quite like it elsewhere. I think that it's an amazing organization, and they're really championing artists here. So I've been really surprised by it, and also like some fabulous galleries involved with it as well, and really giving a chance to a lot of the artists here through this organization. So yeah, I just think it's fantastic to show here. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I feel honored, and I just, it's been a wonderful experience so far.
It's interesting because art, I think, maybe unfairly has this reputation of being, you know, expensive and, you know, maybe for the elite in terms of the people that collect it. And then you have East Van, which is sort of this very, you know, much more low income kind of community. How do you think an event like the Culture Crawl is helping to maybe bridge that gap a little bit?
Well, I think especially because it's open studios, so I think that, you know, there's a little more leeway in terms of price if you can buy something out of the studio from artists, because a lot of the times with galleries, it's a 50% markup fee, right? Like the gallery takes 50%, which is huge. It's a huge percentage. So it's a very difficult thing for artists to navigate, actually, because they don't want to make their art so hard to, you know, to consume. But that's the issue. And I mean, the galleries have so much overhead also. It's very hard to run a gallery these days, and especially with real estate the way it is. So, you know, like I understand the galleries, but it makes it difficult for the artists because you can't, you know, undersell yourself either, because then you can't afford, I mean, already it's very hard to afford this lifestyle. yeah, I think that, well, what I'm doing now these days is, because I've always wanted to make it more accessible and easier for other people, like for the layman like me, to be able to afford the work. So I'm doing lots of prints. And the prints are amazing these days, like the quality of them. So yeah, that's, I think a lot of artists are sort of like doing both of those things, you know, originals and prints, and trying to make it more accessible than just for the elite.
East Van is such an artistic hub, not only in the province, but I think kind of in the country as well. Why is it, do you think, that, you know, artists kind of, you know, there are certain enclaves where maybe there's a higher proportion of artists? Why is it, do you think, that artists tend to maybe stick together more so than other communities, if I can put it like that?
I think that, like, for visual artists, you mean?
Yeah.
I think that it's really important to have community, even working in the studio, because you need to have those discussions about the art that you're making, and maybe the problems that you're having, or, you know, all of those conversations, and even the work around, like, I'm in a shared studio, so with some wonderful artists, so I get to have, you know, those kind of conversations, or even if they're banal conversations, but they're, everybody's having a similar experience. So, you know, I think it's important that if you don't have a community around you, you're sort of just floating in outer space, which is quite hard to keep yourself motivated, especially at a certain time, you know, in an artist's career. Like if you're just starting out, or if you're younger and you haven't had lots of shows, and, you know, but even having older artists around you with more experience is really important, I've found.
You mentioned the pandemic a little bit, and I think that affected artists in different ways. And we saw a lot of quote unquote celebrities maybe getting into painting more than they used to. How do you think the pandemic affected visual artists?
Well, most of the artists that I've talked to absolutely loved the pandemic because it just like all the other pressures of having to make money at some other job, just dissolved away. So you had that time to really focus without those other pressures around. And in terms of sales, yeah, it wasn't great. It was supposedly great for sort of artists that are quite well known, I think. A lot of galleries were selling, is what I heard. But yeah, I think it was a really good production period for those reasons. Yeah.
You're described as a mixed media artist, which is a term that a lot of people hear but might not, be 100% sure of what that actually means. So when you create a piece, do you start with, one method, one technique, one thing, and then move on? How does a mixed media construction look for you?
Well, I use a lot of different materials. I use oil pastel and acrylic ink material. So it's sort of like it's an acrylic that works like ink. It moves on paper like ink, but then it sort of cures the way acrylic would, so you can layer on top. But that's a water-based material with an oil-based material, which what I like is the way they interact, but traditionally it's not what you would do. You're either, traditionally you were either an oil painter or, nowadays an acrylic painter. And I also collage in things. Like I've done a lot of collage work. I also make sculptures. I haven't for the last few years, but yeah, so I love found materials, working with found materials, and affixing them together, and then like making a sculpture and then painting from that sculpture. And so I'm not really, I also paint a lot on newspaper, and magazines and things. So it's not, traditional oil painting, let's say. When I was in New York, I was making large oil paintings and making my own oil paints and mixing those and things, which was great. But and it's been really interesting because since I was forced to leave during the Trump or regime, it was called. But I was forced to leave there, and I came back here. I didn't have a studio. I just had my bedroom in order to paint. And so a mentor of mine said, why don't you get some paper and get some of these acrylic inks and go from there. And it just completely moved me in this direction I had no idea I would go in. So it was wonderful. I mean, it was a very difficult time, but what came out of it was fantastic. And that's the thing with art, you never know, right? It's you never know what's going to happen. And sometimes when you limit yourself, beautiful things happen. So,
Well, they do say that creativity is sort of born out of restrictions, in a way. Like if you see a filmmaker, if they're very restricted to a budget or a location, sometimes the best the best work happens. Do you ever do that as an artist, where maybe you'll set up so your challenge or you'll put these specific restrictions on a work that you're doing just to see if you can do it?
Yes, I have done that in the past. It's not easy for me to do to restrict myself. I'm somebody that uses tons of color and everything I want to use. So yeah. I think I have to be forced to more so than take it upon myself to just limit anything. Many artists do that, and I think it's it teaches you a lot, for sure.
Well, one thing I was going to say about the paintings behind you is that the first thing that sticks out is the color. As someone who uses a lot of color, how does it work for you? Do you just think like, oh, I'm like this color and this color work together? Is it a lot of trial and error? Is it a lot of mixing? Because not all colors are going to work the same with each other.
I like a lot of layering of color, and the way that so it's I have a lot of training with color, but I would say I was trained to this point, and when I was in New York, I had a lot of tutelage from abstract expressionist painters, which really helped me a lot because as a younger artist, I'd say, without a lot of teaching in painting, because at that time when I did my BFA, painting was considered dead yet again. So I did a lot of sculpture. I've learned to like kind of get rid of the control, this need to control everything. It's a different area of your brain that you're using to make artwork that is not the frontal lobe, which we use all the time. I mean, the whole of society has been created by this frontal lobe, right? That is just logic. So it's like more of sort of an animalistic, sort of imaginative brain that you have to tap into. And so the way I work is that I'll lay down color and it's intuitive. And so it's really everything starts out very abstract with abstract colors. Then I'll work within those forms and colors and mark making and things, and then I'll create the setting and then the characters and then the narrative. So that all sort of comes out later on, getting more towards the finished product of it. And that's has helped me a lot to not force control on an artwork, because I find that once you do that, you end up with a dead piece of work. There's just no life left in it. So that's what I try and do. And I feel like abstract artists know so much about that. I've always wanted to be an abstract artist, but it's not really going to happen. But I'm sort of like in between, I suppose,
Do you think people that aren't artists maybe don't realize how much of art is mental rather than just physical or visual? Because you were talking about frontal lobes and stuff, and it strikes me that there is a very important kind of mentalness or psychology that comes into creating art.
Oh yes, it really is a challenge, psychologically making art for sure. I mean, you're in a room by yourself every day, battling with your own mind. And like I said, often the brain that you use outside of the studio is just so completely different that you have to come in and just leave everything out there. When you're making something. Now I know really wonderful artists. One of my teachers, Bill Jensen, who's an abstract artist, he is 70, he's in his 70s. And he can just come into the studio and boom, he's already there, but there is a struggle until you get to that mastery, I'd say, that you can to do that, to just move from where your outside brain is to your artistic brain.
You talked about battling with yourself, and I think especially since the pandemic and because of it, a lot of artists specifically are talking more about mental health and sort of how important this idea of self-care is. Is that something that you thought a lot more about recently, and what are some
techniques that you use as an artist to make sure that you sort of stay grounded a little bit and don't fight with yourself too much?
Let's see. I have some, like, when I get into the studio, I usually, like, I make kind of fast ink drawings on phone books. And that sort of that drawing without critiquing what I'm doing really helps me to get into that sort of immediate space of being able to intuitively work. I put on Erik Satie, you know, classical, right? And because I paint all the time to music. Music is very important in my work. And so, yeah, I just need to, I get into the, like, that helps me focus, I would say. Also, if I'm sort of stuck in a painting somewhere trying to figure it out, I do a lot of drawings of the composition of that painting, trying to figure out what I can do. I also use my phone a lot, actually. I take pictures of the paintings and then I draw on it. That's really helpful and cuts down a lot of time, actually. Yeah, so those sorts of things. Also, I'd say the best thing for me, I mean, people work at different times of day, but for me now, I'd say just getting into the studio right away before, like as soon as I wake up, before doing anything, talking to anybody, you know, getting involved, like looking at too many emails, you know, that helps to not be get straight into the world, you know.
You mentioned your phone. How do you think this increasing digital world or our increasing reliance on technology has affected not only how we create art, but how we perceive it?
Yeah, interesting question. I think, well, especially with AI now, right. That's something else, because I was looking at Photo Director, I think it is, the app, and yeah, I put one of my paintings in there and, you know, press the AI button and it can change whatever the painting is to marble or, you know, or Picasso, or, you know, you decide what it's, and it immediately changes it. I mean, that's just insane to me. because I mean, so I work in the film industry also, and I'm a scenic artist there. So I make, you know, wood look like marble or look like metal, you know, rusted old metal and things like that. And I could totally understand with the strike and their concerns, because after just looking at that little app, I thought, okay, my job's pretty much on the chopping block pretty soon, right? So there's that aspect, but the positives I'd say are, yeah, sort of the immediacy, the ability to get really good photographs just from a phone in order to make incredible, like, print work. Like, the prints are incredible now. And just from, you know, lighting them properly, but with an iPhone. So, you know, there's negatives and positives, right?
Yeah. You know, I mentioned you worked all over the world. You've done residencies in Paris and New York and Amsterdam, which are three sort of, I think, really artistic cultural hubs. There seems to be maybe a slightly different attitude, I think, towards art in those cities than there is in Canada. I think maybe Canada's a little bit behind in that regard. But what did you learn, you know, being in those different cities about just sort of the appreciation for art and maybe the cultural differences that we see often portrayed?
Mm-hmm. Well, with Paris, for example, it's really interesting there because their education, you know, sort of starts with art. So everybody knows everything about the history of art, especially up to, you know, Picasso, know, 1940s and thing, you know, when it was the heyday in Paris. But yeah, you could talk to a trucker about artwork. And it's just that it's seen as so such an important aspect of life, of our cultural life, and of the narrative of that culture, right? So that was beautiful to see, I think, because a lot of the times it's the arts, you know, that get cut in terms of funding. And I think that's really a travesty because I love history. So I feel that this expression has a lot of answers in it towards about our existence here on Earth, what we've built, why we believe certain things, the stories that have passed on through generations, through hundreds of thousands of years. Like, it's just, it's fascinating. And it should be, I think it should be integral to common knowledge, like just to education in general. So that's, you know, and the thing with France is that they're not so money focused. They're not so economically focused. So yeah, that was beautiful to see. New York, on the other hand, kind of the economic hub of the art world. And if you want to try and make a living and people that are going to buy your work, you think, okay, let's go to New York. And New York's fantastic because there's so many artists of so many different disciplines, and that can really move your work into worlds that you never thought it would go. Like performance, for example. I worked with a lot of dancer choreographers there and made giant found material sculptures that dancers and made dance theater pieces that they moved the pieces on stage and got inside them. And we took that to the Brooklyn Museum and different theaters. And you just, if you don't go there, you would never have that kind of experience. So,
You know, you mentioned funding, and obviously, you know, whenever they're talking about funding for schools, it's always, you know, music, art, libraries. How do we counter that? Is there an antidote for that?
I mean, I think it just comes down to education. I think it needs to be like my art education. Of course, that was a while ago, but it was basically crafts for a lot of, like, in elementary school. I had a couple good teachers in high school for a couple years, and that was really helpful. But I think that, you know, kids can draw. Like, they can draw from, like, by looking at something, or even draw, like, imaginative drawings. And it can be in the vein of actually making art and not craft, like not making a Christmas tree out of macaroni and cheese, the macaroni, right?
Right.
I mean, some people like that. It's fun and all, but it's not art, in my opinion. And I think if there was more value placed on art, then I feel like, because you mentioned mental health before, and I think it is really something that is helpful in terms of that. It definitely keeps me sane. If I wasn't doing it, it wouldn't be good for society. So, and I feel like everybody should do it free, you know?
I heard, I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson say that, you know, so often as adults or as parents, we even unconsciously maybe steer our kids away from art and towards, you know, like engineering, or, you know, because it's so financially unstable. Do we, in whatever it is, do we sometimes get in our own way? Because I know I do that sometimes when I'm writing, And how do you get over that? How do we stop getting in our own way?
I think you just have to do it. You just have to keep doing it. You know, the New York studio school that I went to in New York, it was very studio focused, and I hadn't had that tutoring before, and it's been really like a necessity to keep going, I think, because it doesn't matter what kind of day you're having, you have to just go, you have to make yourself just go and do it. Just go be there in the studio and do something. Even if it doesn't work that day, but you do a couple drawings, you know that like you're continuing your practice, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You alluded to history earlier, and it strikes me that I think artists in a way are almost a type of historian, because they have to pull from, you know, they pull from so many different, you know, places. Do you find a relationship between your art and your sort of interest in history?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, this piece behind me here, this one, so where do I start with this? This is basically like, it's called Time Traveler. And this figure here is kind of like an ominous figure with symbols, you know, and a lot of light, as if, you know, this traveler has just shown up here. And I started this painting before I was going to take a trip to Egypt, which I've always had a fascination with Egypt. Even as a kid, I used to draw, you know, different characters with Egyptian eyes and sort of very 2D. And so, and then once I came back from there, I created all these, like this is Hathor, which is sort of, it's an Isis Hathor kind of goddess character, who is like the goddess of femininity. Well, it was one of the most powerful goddesses in the pantheon, actually, in terms of magic. And she could fly to the underworld and rescue like souls from them, bring them back to the present. But I feel like what I was trying to capture with this painting, because, you know, there's scenes of them going to this, like this is sort of like a more Mesopotamian type of character that would become Isis in the future. So this is sort of a made up character, but it's almost like if you look at ancient art, it feels like you're time traveling. It feels like you're in sort of this different space and time, like not really in the past, but not really in the present, just sort of in this bizarre space in between. I'm constantly looking for heroes, especially feminine heroes. And I mean, there's so many of them, but they've been forgotten. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, Christianity, and sort of when patriarchy really took hold of society. So whereas previous to that, there's these fantastic goddesses with so much power, and you know, the way people would have honored them, you know, with dance. I mean, Hathor was there was two sides to her, actually. Like I'll call her Isis, actually, like the later version of Hathor. And there was like the eye of, so Isis was sort of the feminine counterpart to Ra, which is the god of the sun. And she was also considered the eye of Ra. So the eye of Ra was this fury that came out of him. And in terms of like, if there were the rebellion happening, or, you know, another culture sort of coming in to destroy them, he would send the Eye of Ra there to create havoc and destroy his enemies. And then she would come back and be this like ideal sort of like feminine goddess of love and dance and beauty and things like that. And so you have this powerful like woman that could be full of fury, and the Egyptians believed that. They believed that, you know, so I think how that would have affected society at the time is just so different than how what society is like now, you know, or through the.
Well, you know, on that note, you talked about, you know, Christianity and the patriarchy, and we're living in a time right now where we're sort of reevaluating gender and, you know, roles and all that. And it strikes me that art has always talked about that. You know, you look at ancient cave paintings and, you know, there's eunuchs or there's, you know, people that are indeterminate gender, let's say. How do you think art, I'll phrase it this way, what role can art play in whatever discourse is taking place, whether it's, you know, about gender or whether it's about politics or anything like that? What, how does art play into that?
Well, first of all, I think it can, it's such, the fact that it's a visual medium, you can visualize and sort of like beautify that issue. So I'm a queer artist. So most of my work these days actually is about that very thing and queer issues. So like, for example, I'm working on this piece right now. And it's a trans character, you know, surrounded by these flowers that look like vaginal flowers, basically. So in my mind, I'm trying to figure out at the moment how I'm going to, like, what the best way is to represent this character, because I'm not trans. But I can understand from a perspective of, you know, from like a lesbian perspective, let's say. But I think just the fact that you can see this naked figure, and it's in a sort of like everything, you know, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful painting. So I think it's just, if you're able to see it around you more, like in terms of like LGBTQ rights, it's interesting because I've had people say to me, why do gay people have to be so loud, you know, when it comes to pride? Like, why are they out there and, you know, dress the way they do and, you know, half naked and, you know, singing in the streets and all this sort of stuff? Why can't they just be quiet? And it's like, well, no, the reason that the issues, you know, that we are seeing such gain in acceptance of gay people, like LGBTQ people, is a fact that they have been so loud and they are out there and they are showing themselves what they are, what they want to be, and celebrating themselves. You know, it's the whole point of pride. So I think it's the same with art. You know, the more art you see dealing with these issues, the more it's going to move us forward.
You know, on that note, I love all the explanations you're giving for the couple pieces, but I'm also struck, you know, I was a kid, we were going on field trips or maybe we're doing an assignment and the teacher says, okay, what do you think the artist was or the writer was trying to say with this, right? And it strikes me that maybe sometimes us lay people try to read too much into things, or, you know, like the artist is just like, no, I just use that word, you know, whatever. Can we just divorce ourselves of all that and just admire art for its visualness rather than any other layers it might have?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's part of the problem with art education is the fact that no, there is no, you don't need to have a degree in order to look at art. You know, it's what it is, what the artist is trying to do is just move you. That's it. So And that's what Culture Crawl has been so great for, because I've had such incredible conversations with people about the pieces. Because everybody sees something different. They bring their experience to the artwork. And I mean, it teaches me a lot, you know, what, how people react and what they see in it. And so that's a beautiful moment, I feel, having those conversations with people about the work. And I think that people see, you know, especially if you're going to a museum, like museum shows are just so well curated that, and written about, that people think that's how it's supposed to be when you're talking to an artist, but that's not the case at all. It's real, we really love discussion, you know?
Yeah. Well, on that note, you know, this is the East Side Culture Crawl. There's a lot of different artists. Do you get to meet and mingle with some of the other artists that are taking part?
I unfortunately, I wish I did, but it's so busy that no, we need to stay in our own studio spaces during that time. And that's, I hope that they think about maybe doing two crawls or you know, a day for the artists to go around to each other's spaces. Yeah, that would be nice.
as an artist, what do you enjoy most about seeing other people's work?
That's a hard question. There's so much that I love about it. I think the conversations are great. Like, that's, I love to talk to artists. I think being an artist and then talking with other artists, you already know the process, the creation process. So you can kind of like skip a lot of steps and in conversation and talk about, like, you know, the composition or the symbols that they're using to reference whatever they want to reference in the world. And you can kind of, you know, create, like, there's this like understanding of what you're trying to do with your work. That's, you know, comforting, I guess. Yeah.
I know you also do sculptures and prints. Is there a different mindset for you when you're doing a painting versus another sort of medium or art form? Is it, or is the headspace always the same?
I think it's pretty much the same for me. The way I work is pretty much always the same. I mean, I was originally a drawer and then learned a lot about painting and fell in love with it. And so really the sculpture that I make is a sculpture that a painter would make. It's not, you know, it's not sculpture that a sculptor would make. But I think that that's really interesting too. Artists of different disciplines, like trying working in different disciplines that they wouldn't normally, because then you see unexpected, you know, mark making or symbolism or like, I remember a sculptor at the New York Studio School and his drawings were just incredible because they're just not drawings that a painter would make.
Is there any method or medium that you haven't done yet or maybe don't have a lot of experience with yet that you would like to get more into?
I've always wanted to make films, more film. It's kind of a dream because it's so expensive, but you know, I mean, you could do it on a low budget, of course. But yeah, I've done like dance theater work, like I said, performance art work. And I do love the performance aspect. It scares me to death, but it's a good challenge. And yeah, so I've done a few films here and there, just abstract things, but yeah, I'd love to do that more, I think.
Like, mm-hmm. But behind the camera or more like acting?
Behind the camera, yeah, behind the camera, more sort of directing, I guess. And
yeah. Well, I mean, we do see there have been a lot of artists that have sort of made that leap, like Julian Schnabel comes to mind. Do you think, I mean, for you in the sort of the few films that you've made, has it been an easy transition for you, that the leap to filmmaking?
It's easy trim. I mean, I'm just fooling around by myself, so
Right.
I haven't got to the point where I have a crew and and a production designer and all this. So I'm really talking about more that level,
Right.
than just sort of fooling around with film. But it's been fun. I made a film, a short film with a couple dancers in Brooklyn, and it was about climate, and I had a whole bunch of people from the community come up and pour all of this like paint, black paint and coffee grounds and all the stuff on top of them while they were dancing. And it was beautiful, like just visually so beautiful. So yeah, moments like that are amazing, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't, if it's a new medium, it's just an idea until you see it and you have no idea what it's going to look like
All right.
in that medium. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so much of art is about experimentation anyway, right? So,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
what are you know, the culture crawl starts, what is it, the 16th, I think?
See, yeah.
16th to 19th. So that would be a week. A week tomorrow, actually, a week Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What are you looking forward to the most, about the culture crawl this year?
I think it's the people. I think it's those conversations, people coming in, and being able to talk to the public about, the work that I'm doing. Even in New York, I never had this many people come through the studio. It's just fantastic that way. I mean, it'd be great to sell some things. That would be great. But yeah, I think it's mostly the conversations around the crawl, I'd say.
Well, it's definitely been a great conversation about art and technique and all the other aspects of art and painting that we don't see. And again, the East Side Culture Crawl has its 4-day event, November 16th to 19th, Thursday through Sunday. Nikki Singleton, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's been such a pleasure.
Cheers.
Well, once again, that was my interview with artist Nikki Singleton. You can find her among the many being featured and taking part in this year's East Side Culture Crawl in Vancouver, which runs from Thursday, November 16th to Sunday, November 9th. Please visit culturecrawl.ca for full details. That does it for me today. My thanks to Nikki Singleton. I'll see you from the UK. Bye, everybody. Bye.